Before we get to today's episode of Five on the Floor, make sure you check out one of the great sponsors of this podcast and the other podcasts in the Five Reasons Sports Network, and that is AutoNation. They're the largest auto retailer from coast to coast, and their friendly and knowledgeable staff here in South Florida will help you save big on a huge selection of new cars, trucks, and SUVs, Toyota, Honda, Chevrolet, Mercedes-Benz, and much more. And if you're looking to buy pre-owned, shop AutoNation's huge selection of one-price pre-owned vehicles, all clearly marked with one price, the lowest price guaranteed. Or if you just want to get rid of that old car, turn it into cash today, get a top dollar offer and a check the same day. They'll buy your car with no purchase necessary. Your check engine light on right now. Get the services you need at low AutoNation prices, oil changes, tires, batteries, and more, all for less. Call or visit AutoNation.com to schedule your appointment today. All right, but here's the thing. I used to say that a lot. If you're in the market for a new car, make sure you DM me at 5ReasonSports on Twitter. That's the number 5ReasonSports. I will give an AutoNation senior manager your information, with your permission, so they can reach out to you directly and walk you through the buying process. So no waiting online, no getting lost in the sauce or any of that stuff. An AutoNation senior manager will reach out to you directly. And now, on to today's episode.
Welcome to Five on the Floor, a Miami Heat and NBA podcast from Ethan Skolnick with Alphon Sydney, a.k.a. Alf954. Brought to you by the Five Reasons Sports Network.
Welcome in to the latest episode of the Five on the Floor podcast. I'm Ethan Skolnick here, as I usually am, with Alphon Sydney. You can find him at Alf954. You can find me at Five Reasons Sports and at Ethan J. Skolnick on Twitter. Make sure to check out the other podcasts in our network. People ask how. It's very easy. Just go to your podcast provider, whatever it is. It could be Stitcher. It could be Podbean. It could be Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. And Tune FM or whatever, Tune In, whatever it's called. All of these different podcast apps, okay, Pocket Cast, and even Spotify. And just type in 5 Reasons Sports. You'll find all the other podcasts in our network. 3 Yards Per Carry, of course, gearing up for the season with the Dolphins. The Fish Tank had their first ever training camp episode. They had 4 current Dolphin players on there, including former Kane Allen Hurns on there telling training camp stories. It's great stuff. And also, of course, 5 Rings Canes with Josh Darrow, David Lake, and also with Andrew Ivins. I was with those guys at Canes Media Day the other day. Nobody more plugged in on kind of who these players were and what they can become than Andrew Ivins, since he is the recruiting guy down here for the Canes. Also, check out Smark Your Territory. They think I ignore them all the time, so I'm not ignoring them. Our wrestling podcast, it's maybe the most fun podcast in our network, actually. So check that out. And of course, Light Skin Opinions will be back when Alf and friends stop losing the file. All right, let's get to the Heat.
That wasn't my fault.
I know. That's Parrish's
fault. Blame Parrish.
I blame Parrish. If he's listening, Parrish, your fault. All right, so we're going to get back to the Heat today. We hit like 5 topics the other day. And people say it's the off season. It's like, this is really the off season. Like, this is not the July off season. This is like the dead part of the NBA schedule. And yet there's still shit to talk about. So let's get to 3 things today. And let's hit the, this was my plan for this to be the first thing.
Are we going to go over all of Magic Johnson's list?
I think we need to make our own list. Right?
Have you seen all of Magic's list?
Dude, he has done everything he can not to have to work. It's amazing. Like he was running a team with LeBron James on it in a place where he won championships in, like, you know, the marquee franchise in the sport, and decided to leave so he could post lists on Twitter of his favorite movies. It's fantastic. Like, look, let the man do what he wants, I guess, right? But
his top 60 movies. Did you see what it was?
Well, I saw that he had. We could debate this another time, but I mean,
it was
The
Godfather and everything else in alphabetical order.
Yes, I know. Well, he is that why he had Boomerang ahead of Coming to America?
Yeah, it was on the entire list was in alphabetical order.
That it's just I he's an icon, man. But he's one of a kind. Look, I go back to, I was in college when, you know, news broke of the HIV, you know, situation, and what was it, 91, right? And yes. I remember writing columns about that and everything, because everybody was like, so, I mean, at the time, you know, the culture at the, you know, the time and kind of what, you know, what HIV diagnosis meant and all that. And, you know, we didn't think it'd be around in 5 years. I mean, like, now we're, what are we, 28 years later or something like that? He's making lists in alphabetical order on Twitter. So I guess look at the bright side.
It used to be a death sentence.
I know. And Easy, now it's...
Easy, they said Easy had AIDS, and 2 weeks later he was dead.
Right.
I mean, now Magic only had HIV, and that's a whole other conversation. But
right, and yeah, also, but I'm sure he got the best, absolute best treatment at the time, right? But it's great. Magic, you know, thrive, you know. But yeah, the lists are interesting. We're not really going to talk about that. We're going to talk about something else that's happening on social media. And this one cracks me up because it's just, I just honestly think that these guys are fucking with us now. Like, it's just, you know, some of it was real because you knew it was real behind the scenes, like Jimmy Butler, you know, the Hey Big Head and all that with Dwayne. Okay, that's a relationship, and Dwayne knows stuff and whatever. But like, this latest thing is that, what was it? Butler followed Beal on IG, right?
Yeah.
And then John Wall followed Kelly Olynyk of all people, but not Justice Winslow. So now the assumption is that John Wall is being traded to the Heat and Justice is one of the players going back the other direction. Like, this is where it's August. What's today? August 15th. I got to pay my rent. Then August 15th.
The latest Heat promo on Instagram about a month ago, it had Justice, Bam, Myers Leonard, Tyler Hero, and Jimmy Butler was a promo. Now mm-hmm. it's just Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, and Myers Leonard.
Right. So Justice
and Bam are gone.
Justice has vanished. Right. But also, wasn't there something else on social media with like Spoelstra, with like Justice in a training room and Spoelstra watching him? Or was that, is that an old photo that people are posting? I don't know.
Who knows? I can't keep up with all the nonsense.
Yeah, I think it's old because Eric told me he was going out west, so I don't even know that he's in town anymore. But, you know, so anyway. Okay, so what do we make of this? Because the Bradley Beal thing has to sustain us, right, for the next 9 months, right? Like the Jimmy Butler thing did. Like, we're going to – I mean, you and I are going to pound this on a million podcasts. Like, we're going to – I have a guy who listens to this pod, and he sits above where – Riley and Zoe and Andy typically sit at the games, you know, on the baseline. Well, Riley sits in a couple different locations because he always sits by that tunnel, you know, and you kind of see who's in his seats that day or whatever, if he's with Chris, his wife, or he's sitting, or sometimes he sits in the baseline and Zoe sits in the baseline line. Andy, and last year, you know, it was fascinating because, you know, it was one guy who I know who has season tickets, but they're up a little bit. And he would send me photos of what game was on the television, on the monitor that they were watching. And it was always Minnesota, right? And then but then a little bit it was Washington. So I guess this year it's going to be Washington, right? Like, we're going to be watching, like, you know, is Jimmy Beal I'm doing it myself. Is Bradley Beal frustrated, right? You know, is Washington losing by 15, you know, and all the rest of that stuff.
Yeah, we're going to watch every face he makes, every gesture, every – you know, if he posts on Instagram, oh man, it's hot in Washington today. We're gonna be like, oh look, he's talking about heat.
Right, exactly.
We're gonna dissect everything he says. It's gonna be a long year.
Yeah, exactly. But what do you make of it? I mean, is this legitimate or are they just messing with everybody?
I think there has to be some of it. Like, I mean, they know what's going on, right? They know, and it wasn't just Kelly Olynyk. I think he followed Tyler Hero and followed a few guys from the John Wall did a few guys from the Heat all in the same day. I don't know if they have to know what's going on, right?
But the thing, right? They have to know, but
they have to be aware.
But why are you okay, so, all right, you get a new job, right? Okay, or you got the potential of it. Not even you get a new job. You got the potential of a new job, okay? And so, I mean, do you automatically, like, oh, I'm going to follow those six people right now at this time? No, right? That's why I think that some of this is staged. Like, it's too convenient. It's like, well, I need to know what Tyler Harrow's doing on IG in case I'm trading.
Yeah, just in case I got to play with him. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, it's never a precursor for anything. Like, every time someone's like, oh, such so-and-so deleted all their pictures with their team's logo on it from their Instagram.
Like, didn't Tyler Johnson do that like 2 years ago? I remember.
Exactly. Tyler Johnson, they do it. It never actually is a precursor for anything. Like, if we go back to all the Instagram and Twitter tea leaves of people following, unfollowing, deleting photos, James Johnson like has deleted all of his photos like four times.
Right. And what people don't realize too is sometimes they're deleting photos for a reason that has nothing to do with basketball.
Exactly.
Also, I mean, let's be honest here. Okay, maybe they weren't supposed to be in a certain place at a certain time, right? Like, I mean, this is, I mean, that's normal human behavior. That's not specific to the NBA.
I've dated women who delete their IG photos every 3 months. Like, they're not joining the Knicks. Like,
right. Well, the state of the
Knicks. Might.
They might. Right. They
could use, right. The last right. girls with head handles, like, they could use her.
All right. We're just going to move on from that. Look, I don't make much of this. It's fun. I'm glad it's happening in August. I mean, today is August 15th as we're taping this. This is the literal dead point of the NBA schedule. I mean, we are doing a pod because we are now a month away from all of the free agent activity, and we are now a month away from training camp. This is ground zero. Okay. There's nothing going on. And so, you know, you just had the schedule, so you don't even have that BS to look forward to. So that's why I think this has become a story, and they are bleeping with everybody at this stage. Like, that's my view on it. I don't think it means anything.
Heat fans are creepily stalking Bradley Beal.
No, they are. They are. But I think in this case, okay, so that's an interesting point you raised. They are. There's no question. The Heat fans can be absolutely creepy about that. Probably the creepiest. But the thing about it is, I don't think they're doing it. I don't think it's going to bother him. Like, for instance, like when Peyton Manning came, remember when Peyton Manning was being, you know, recruited by all these teams, he ended up in Denver.
Helicopters. And
well, we had, was it Rush Lowe? I forgot. One of the reporters down here literally chased him into a field, you know, in his car. So that didn't go over very well. I actually think what happened in Toronto with Kawhi, with that kind of circus, I don't think it made any difference, because as we found out, he kind of was trying to head to, you know, to do what he did anyway.
Yeah, he had made his decision already.
Right, but I don't think it necessarily was a positive when you had a guy who really didn't want attention and was getting that much attention. But from what, you know, the conversation I had with Candace here in the pod, I think Bradley Beal wants to be appreciated. And Washington is a weird basketball town. In other words, it's not a good one. Like, it should be, but it's not. And, you know, she told me that, you know, he's basically the second biggest star in town now behind Ovechkin. Which, you know, because Bryce Harper's gone and all the rest of that, and Max Scherzer, and, you know, that doesn't translate quite the same way. So it's really Beal second, but I also think in Washington, it's just not like that. I mean, you know, that city, I know that city. It's just not, I mean, as I always say, you go to a Wizards Heat game, and even when LeBron wasn't there, it was just Dwayne. It was 70% Heat fans.
You're going to go this year, it's going to be more Heat fans.
Absolutely. So I just
– I mean, D.C. is such a – I mean, we're a transient city. Like,
right.
Look, I mean, D.C. is – nobody lives in D.C. I mean, nobody's from D.C., right? You're there for work. You're there
right.
as a congressman.
Like. Right. Or you're getting greased as a lobbyist, you know, to make sure that the environment's unprotected. And right. And so, and then you get a $5 million condo in Georgetown. Right. But that's right. Exactly. Right. Exactly. So, I think that maybe appreciating Bradley Beal is not the worst thing here. And continuing to show that you want him. So I don't think that's going to backfire on Heat fans. It is creepy, but I don't think it's going to backfire, but I also wouldn't make much of what's going on now. Another of the great sponsors of the 5 Reasons Sports Network. I can attest to this personally because they just threw out my traffic ticket for me. It was no problem, no points on the license, no other details that I had to deal with. You've got to check out the law firm of Seltzer Mayberg. You can find them at onecalllegal.com. That's onecalllegal.com, or call 1-855-5000-LAW, 1-855-5000-LAW. They handle cases including but not limited to car accidents, slip and falls, and of course, traffic tickets. And they've got a new 15,000 square foot office, which we work out of at times as well, on I-95 in North Miami. They handle cases from all over the state. They got a special now. If you mention 5 Reasons or 5 on the Floor, they will take care of your traffic ticket for $49.95. Go check out that price somewhere else. You're not going to get it. Call now, 24/7 service for a free consultation. That's onecalllegal.com, 1-855-5000-LAW, Seltzer Mayberg. All right, let's get to topic two here today. And this actually started, I mentioned this on the pod, the timing of this. This actually started with a Sunday afternoon. We have nothing else to talk about. And the vodka is $20 for unlimited for all day. Conversation with Shandell Richardson of The Athletic.
Oh, I did slander.
I know.
Why men can't jump.
Oh, you did? Good. Because he texted me with your tweet about it. Because Chandel
slandered him on the Wide Men Can't Jump podcast. So.
Well, that's good. Well, I mean, yeah, he's now a wide man who can't jump either. I didn't even participate in the media game. He was telling me about what he did. You know, he was 21 years old. So anyway, he covers the Heat for The Athletic. You guys probably know Chandel. He's worked down here a long time. But he was trying to make this case to me that Iverson was better than Wade. And he was basically getting shot down by everybody. So I threw it on social media. I mean, he's in South Florida. We're in Fort Lauderdale, so he's going to get shot down, but it's another of his terrible takes. But then just coincidentally, NBA 2K, which by the way, my Twitter feed will be back on there this year. NBA 2K, came up with their list of the all decade teams. And really, The ones from 70s, 80s, 90s didn't bother me at all. I thought they actually pretty much got it right. You know, I mean, it's hard to – I didn't see a lot of the 70s.
I would have put Dr. J over Kevin McHale in the 80s.
I agree. I do agree with – well, I think – yes, I agree with that. I think with Dr. J it's a little complicated because later on in that decade he trailed off pretty good.
He was better in the 70s than he was in the 80s.
But. Right, and some of it, he was better in the ABA than he was in the NBA. And so I think that plays into it. But that 83 team, which we've talked about, was a great, great team. And he was, you know, along with Moses, the best player. I think that one's a little complicated. But the one that came out in the 90s, the 2000s, do you have it up? Because I just lost it. What the team was for?
Oh, I mean, I don't have it up, but it was Iverson, Kobe, LeBron.
Right.
LeBron, Shaq.
Here we go. Let me just give everybody all of them. Okay, so we'll go the 80s team. Okay, was Magic and Michael. I mean, yeah. You know, I would put Magic on a top 60 list too. One of his top 60 lists. Larry Bird, yes. And then Moses at center, which is you can make cases for other people. And then
you could.
Definitely. Yeah, right. And then McHale, which I agree with you. You could have put Dr. J on there. You know, I also think, you know, I mean, you look at other forwards you could have put there. I can make a case. I know most people won't. I can make a case for James Worthy over McHale too.
Yeah, I was going to say that as well. I think James. What happened to Worthy is that he just was in the shadow of Kareem and Magic.
Right. But greatest finisher of all time, by the way. Greatest break finisher, in my opinion. I'm not talking about highlight dunks. I'm talking about greatest finisher on the break. That guy in transition running the lanes over. That was and much more skilled than, like you're saying, much more skilled than he had opportunity. The best third option in NBA history. To me, that's not even a question.
I would agree. I would agree.
So I can, but yeah, I mean, I can see McHale over him, but Dr. J is, I mean, certainly in terms of impact on the league, I mean, it's not close. Like it's Dr. J over McHale all day long. And you know, and it's not just because I hate McHale's politics now. It's just generally, I mean, you know, those teams are in the, McHale was a great, great player. But Dr. J was the best player on his team. Again, a great championship team. I would agree, even more impactful than I would argue, even more impactful than Moses on that team. And was in terms of, like I say, impact on the league, a transformational figure. It's Dr. J. It's not Kevin McHale. So I would have gone Dr. J. All right. So
nobody's YouTubing Kevin McHale highlights.
Correct. Except Kevin McHale's white crazy wife. All right. So anyway. Check out that Twitter feed, by the way. All right, so go to 1990s, right? Okay, so I had a hard time arguing with this either. Stockton, you know, Stockton. The thing about Stockton, and we can say what Stockton would do today, and I've had conversations with John Crotty, who played with him about this, who thinks Stockton would be incredible today. You can argue that it would be difficult for him to keep up with some of the athletes today, but the reality is Stockton is the all-time leader in steals and assists. He belongs on that team. And that team was, you know, in Utah, built a power. So that's a great. Michael and Scotty is obvious. Akeem is obvious to me. I mean, there are others in there, David Robinson, et cetera. Akeem was the transformational center of that period.
Yes.
You can make and then Carl. I mean, Carl won, and whether Carl should have won the MVP or not won the MVP, you know, Carl, again, with Stockton, those five, it's hard to argue with. I don't think that one's even particularly close, to be honest. But then you get to the 2000s, all right? And this is where it gets a little controversial. Shaq and Duncan, obvious. LeBron, obvious. Kobe, obvious, right? Okay. Iverson. So I was trying to figure this out on Basketball Reference, and I'm just not very good at it. So if Christian, if you're listening and you want to give me a 10-minute tip, I'm good at it, but I'm not like Nikias Christian level good at it. All right. So
I'm terrible at it.
Yeah, I know you are. So
they have synergy.
That's why I didn't even bother with you on this. Yeah.
You asked, I was like, what? What's no, Basketball Reference?
Right. So I was trying to do a side-by-side comparison of Wade and Iverson and Nash for the 2000s. Because Heat fans can be myopic about this. So their whole argument is based on Wade versus Iverson. But, I mean, Steve Nash did win two MVPs in the decade. And basically his offense – which was his offense, okay?
Yeah.
Was, and now, I know he gave it all up on the other end, but his offense was the best offense pretty much every year he was playing as a starting point guard. So, you know, you can make a case for Nash. But let's just look at Iverson, and let's look at Wade. And
also, again, Jason Kidd existed in
absolutely, absolutely. Okay.
Which so, that always – listen, I'm not a huge fan of Kidd, right. Off-the-court stuff, and also he was a Maverick. Right. But – I mean, yeah. I think we just forget how great he was.
No, and he was a triple-double. I mean, the Jason Kidd triple-double is named the Jason Kidd triple-double because of him. So, but let's look at the side-by-side is a little more complicated than I wanted it to be, but let's look at just the 2000s, all right, with some context. Dwayne Wade didn't enter the NBA until 2003, okay? So I think what a lot of Heat fans are doing here, this is not an argument of whether Dwayne or Iverson is better. That stupid argument that Shandell made, I'm not even going to entertain, because Dwayne Wade was much better than Allen Iverson as a two-way player. Just was. I mean, Iverson was a steals guy, but you couldn't put him.
Was also, he was the steals thing always bothers me, because a lot of guys who are high up there in steals gamble a lot and put a lot of pressure on the rest of their defense. So steals to me as a defensive metric, and I think a lot of guys who study stats will tell you steals as a defensive metric, even blocks sometimes, mm-hmm. but steals overall as a defensive metric is so flawed.
It is. Well, the problem with Iverson was, who could you put him on, right? I mean, they even, you know, because the other argument with Iverson, and I remember Shandell and I having this conversation with LeBron and Dwayne, because one of them, I think it was LeBron, agreed with Shandell, and Dwayne agreed with me, that I said, you know, Allen Iverson was a two. And he said he was a point. I said, no, he was a two, but they had to hide him defensively on point guards.
First of all,
he couldn't guard up.
Yeah, so, he couldn't guard. You had to hide him defensively on point guards, and he needed the ball in his hand so much, you might as well call him a point guard. But he was, you're right, he was a shooting guard.
He was a two, right. But he kind of, now these days it doesn't really matter, right? Because these days most of your point guards are combo guards, really. And so it's different. And Iverson ushered that in. And look, if we're going to argue about impact on society and the game, you can make a very strong case for Iverson over pretty much anybody. So you can make that, as much as Dwayne has become, you know, an international icon in fashion and on wine and all this stuff, Iverson was a movement, right? He represented something to a lot of people. Dwayne doesn't do that. Dwayne's admired, but he doesn't represent something.
But what you're saying right now is the movement he created, the fact that he was so cool, right? Like, right. He was such a hip thing. Like Iverson, the cornrows, the clothes he would wear, the fact that his wardrobe made David Stern change the right. rules of how you right. had to dress coming to games. Like all that societal and cultural impact, I think people overrate the hell out of Iverson. And honestly, I'm not here to bash the guy, but he's completely overrated. Like, people talk about that game against the Lakers in 2001, right. I believe.
Yeah, game one.
Where
he stepped on Lou.
And the Lakers were undefeated going to that series.
Right.
At finals. And, you know, Iverson, they took one game, right? And he stepped over Lou, and it was iconic. The rest of that series, somebody pointed it out on Twitter, Lou locked Iverson up.
Yes, yeah.
For the next four games. But the thing with Iverson, like, people have blinders on when it comes to him. Like, he got locked up by Tyronn Lue for four games
right.
in a final series
I think he shot like 36% over the next four. Look, some of it was on that team. He had to, right? I mean, that was along with the 07 Cavs, probably the two worst finals teams we've seen in the past 20 years.
I mean, right? There were some Pacers teams and some Nets teams.
I covered that series. No, that team was better than the Sixer team.
I'm saying they were better, but that was a pretty. I mean, the East was really bad.
No, it was. But that team, with Reggie and Jalen, the way Jalen was playing that year, at least there was a legitimate second. Their bigs were good. They rolled what Smits, the Davis guys. That team was Derek McKee was a pretty good player. That was a pretty good team. That Sixers team was. I mean, literally Jermaine Jones was getting minutes. Like that was not a good team. I covered both series. It was no comparison. That Sixer team was Iverson. That was it. But I agree with you that he's been overrated. Now, okay. But let's do the comparison. So. When you're comparing the 2000s, you have to take into account that Dwayne was at Marquette for part of this, okay? So, and in those 3 years that Dwayne was at Marquette, one of which was Prop 48, but, Iverson averaged in those 3 years, 31-1 led the league, 31-4 led the league, 27-6. Averaged 42 minutes, 43 minutes, and 43 minutes. I mean, these times were different. No load management, right? For a kid, yeah. a guy – that size, okay.
Pound for pound, he's one of the best players ever for that size,
right?
But he's also historically inefficient, and that's
okay. So let me give you the numbers. So those 3 years, he shot 42%, 40%, 41%, 3-point percentage. He was never a real good 3-point shooter. But he was never that high volume either. I mean, in 2001. He took 25 shots a game. Four of them were threes. Different time. But a 32%, 29%, 28% from three. So his effective field goal percentage for those 3 years was 45, 42, 44.
That's putrid.
Right.
That is really, really bad. Like, and so
he also we mentioned steals. He also led the league in steals all three seasons.
Yeah, and
but he also led the league in turnovers, one of them. He had his assist to turnover first year, 4.6 to 3.3, 5.5 to 4.0, 4.2 to 3.5. So he was what he was. He was a low efficiency, high turnover player, which Dwayne was neither of those two things.
Leave Dwayne 25 shots a game.
Yes. Well, let's look at it. Okay. So let's see. Dwayne got the most shots that Dwayne ever averaged in a season was 20.5. And that was 2008, 2009, which was his best season.
What was his efficiency that year?
His effective field goal percentage that year was – hold on. I know some people don't love that stat, but it's what I have to work with right now. His effective field goal percentage – let me find it. Advanced. Okay. Was – where the hell is it? Sorry. We do this stuff on the fly. Yeah. Here it is. Okay. Was 52. 52.
Yes.
So, career wise, okay, Dwayne's this to me is the case for again we're touching on just decades here, but if you're talking overall career, to me the case for Dwayne, other than being a better defensive player when he was engaged in it, is that his effective field goal percentage for his career was 49.5. The effective field goal percentage for Iverson never had a season that high. So that was Dwayne. That was Dwayne's, and that was Dwayne's career. And Iverson never had a season that high. His highest, his career was 45. So you're talking basically 50% or 45%. And that again accounts for the fact that Dwayne was not a good 3-point shooter either. So yeah. It's not like this isn't the Steph Curry or James Harden situation where their effective field goal percentage is pumped up, or Ray Allen, because they're taking a bunch of threes and they're making a bunch of threes. Dwayne was not taking a bunch, and when he did take a bunch, he was under 30, historically around 30%. So it's just as a career, this is not a good comparison. Dwayne Wade was a better player than Al Iverson, but
we're not even talking about defensively.
Defensively, and this is not all Iverson's fault, because the second best player he ever played with, you know, during his prime was Mutombo for like a short period of time, right? But like, so we're not even making, but the reality is, I mean, Dwayne has, you know, the three titles and the five finals appearances, and Allen has one finals appearance. So I as a career entity, like, it's not close. I don't think it's close, but just 2000s. If you're going to look at Iverson and the fact that he was playing 3 years before, and he led the league in scoring two of them before Dwayne even joined the NBA, and then you have him leading the league in scoring again in Dwayne's second season, and then you have him averaging even more, 33, the next year with higher efficiency. He did shoot 45% that year on 33 points a game on 40. It may have actually been his best season, even though it's not the year he won the MVP. And then, you know, didn't really – you know, trail off until he kind of hit the wall. So he was traded to Denver, remember? And then, you know, and then he was traded to Denver and he played with Carmelo and he played all 82 games for Denver and averaged 26, okay, at age 32. Very impressive. 46% from the field. And then it hit the, and then the year, and that was the year Dwayne obviously struggled and had the injuries and 15 wins and all that. But then the next year when Dwayne began to ascend again, Iverson hit the wall. That next year, he shot 41%, averaged 17, and then it was all – remember, then after that, it was Memphis, Philly, Detroit, gone, right?
So, yeah, and then – and also, he just wouldn't accept a different role.
Right, right? Which is Carmelo's problem too, right?
Exactly. Right. So I think you have to take that into consideration as well. So talking about overall career, the fact that Dwayne Wade, on the decline, accepted different roles and did whatever he had to do to continue to win
– right.
Makes him a better player in my eyes.
Yeah, you know? I don't think the better player conversation is even I mean.
But even so, even when we're talking about that decade, we're talking about Dwayne Wade didn't play for the first 3 years, but the last 3 years, Iverson was crap. So if we can still look at it in its totality and say, in the 2000s, Dwayne Wade was a better player.
I think I can make the argument the other way on that one. Just because of – it's just a product of circumstance because, you know, Dwayne Wade was getting his feet wet in the NBA and Allen Iverson was, you know, one of the elite guys in the league, whatever you thought of his efficiency. But let's look at – the guy's not being talked about here is Nash, okay? So if you go 2000s, okay? So this is from when Steve was 25, 26 to 35, okay? So it's just when he started to ascend. All right, so in Dallas, you know, he starts – actually, 2000 was the first time he started every game, okay? So before that, he wasn't a starter. So he becomes a starter, and then we see the ascent. And then, obviously, he was great with Nowitzki, right? But he wasn't an MVP. But then he goes to Phoenix in 2004, leads the league in assists three straight years, wins two MVPs in his 30s. Never averaged more than 18-8, but I always believe if Nash just shot more, I mean, his efficiency was, I mean, he was, you know, if you look at the years in Phoenix, he shot, this is 50%, 51%, 53%, okay?
Insane.
Effective field goal percentage in 2006-2007 was 61% while shooting 90% from the line, okay, while averaging 11.5 assists and 18.5 points. I understand that Heat fans will always have this thing about how Shaq should have won the MVP that year, but fine. But the disparaging of Nash's accomplishments, I think, has gone too far. I mean, the guy, like, there's this old quote that Don Shula had, that about Montana and Marino, or maybe I'm sorry, it wasn't Shula. It was actually it was more impactful. It was Bill Walsh. Okay, the late great Bill Walsh, one of the greatest guys you'll ever meet in the NFL, by the way. And so Walsh had this quote where he actually said about Montana and Marino, he said, you know, Joe Montana is the best possible product of a system. Dan Marino is a system. And, yep. And so Steve Nash was a system, like offensively, we'll get to defense in a second. Offensively, it was what, I mean, D'Antoni has not done that without him. I mean, he did with Jeremy Lin for a month, right? With Chris Duhon for a week, but he hasn't done that, right? James Harden. But James Harden is running a total. I mean, that's not.
It's a different. D'Antoni. It's a completely different offense. It's not.
It's not D'Antoni's offense. It has no. You wouldn't recognize it. I mean, Spo will admit to you, he stole more from D'Antoni than anybody else. But D'Antoni's not running that shit anymore. They're running ISO
all day.
Okay, so. So, but Steve Nash was like, that was the system. Like that was, so it was basically the flourishing of, you know, it was of what D'Antoni was putting out there. So I just, you know, to me, I think we can't look past what Nash was. I mean, and he didn't really trail off by the end of the decade. Like his last year, decade 2009-2010, he averaged 16.5, 11 assists, 94% from the line, and 51% from the field. Played 81 games at age 35. So I think we need to put Steve Nash. If we're going to have this conversation with Wade and Iverson, we have to have it with Nash. Now, the other end. Okay, never going to the finals. If Amare and Boris Diaw don't come off the bench, they do, and they probably win. They might win the championship that year.
They would have. I think they would have won the championship that year.
Right. So I don't. You know, and he was historically, and this is a bit of a knock against Dwayne. He was an incredibly durable player. Right. So if you go from 2001, 2002. 82 games, 78 games, 75 games, 79 games, 76 games, 81 games, 74 games, 81 games. I mean, see, he played the whole decade. He played it at a high level. If you want to make a case for Nash, I'll hear it out. That's my thing. I don't think this is just Wade and Iverson. Now,
I know. I honestly think the conversation is Wade, Iverson, Jason Kidd.
Nash. Okay. So, well, and we can. All right, so let's do this real quick. And
I would put Wade, Nash, and Kidd over Iverson, and I know that's blasphemous, but I've never been a fan of inefficient, high volume guys. It's just never been my thing, and they don't win. They win nothing.
Right. All right. So let's look at Kidd. Okay. So Kidd, 2000, he was still with Phoenix. Okay, this is last year in Phoenix. Led the league in assists, okay, for the third straight year. It was either him or Nash the whole decade, basically. Then goes to Jersey, plays 82, transformational in terms of that organization, right? Like, totally changed it. Shot 39% from the floor. But again, there's different – it's like all of these guys have knocks, right? Okay, so Iverson, it's the overall inefficiency. Kidd, it was some of that and not high volume as a scorer. Nash, it was the defense. With Kidd, it wasn't the defense. A kid defended. So that's okay. But, you know, an average 9.9 assists. Next year led the league in assists for Jersey. Also, average 18.7. Another great year for Jersey after that. Okay. I mean, really strung together between age 28 and 33, like six really strong seasons for the Nets. All in this decade before he ended up back in Dallas. And then, you know, was more of a backup. I mean, he was kind of a part-time player. I shouldn't say that. He started the first 3 years he was back in Dallas. So he did start those first 3 years. And actually, you know, of course, you know, we know what happened in the finals, you know, that the third year of the four years. So, and then was with the Knicks, and then he was phased out. So he wasn't as much of a factor coming out of that decade. But through most of the decade, you can make an argument for Jason Kidd, too. I mean, as far as Kidd versus Nash, I know there are Mavericks fans who probably have that conversation, right? Like, because they have relationships with both of them. And that's an interesting historical argument. But you can throw Kidd in there too. I think Iverson of the four may have been the, I agree with you. He may have been the wrong choice. Maybe
I put him fourth on that list.
Yeah.
Because, and we're not going straight point guard, shooting guard. Like,
no, they're not. No, they're not.
Argument, oh no, they went for a point guard. First of all, Iverson, That's a sketchy argument if you're calling Iverson a point guard in the first place.
Right.
And if you are going to go straight point guard, then Nash and Kidd need to be considered before Iverson. And if you're just going for two guards, I think you put Dwayne Wade above all of them. But I think Iverson comes in fourth in that conversation.
All right, the 2010s here, Curry and Harden, it's hard for – I feel like I've been debating Harden so much on Twitter lately, but – it's hard to argue. Curry is a given. We can have conversations about maybe other guys at the two spot if you're not a fan of some of the things Harden does. But as we've said, the two spot has been pretty much barren, you know, for a while. You know, since Dwayne and Kobe were the top guys. LeBron is obvious. Durant is obvious, and Dwight Howard, to be honest, is obvious. I know people don't like to hear that, but he is early in the decade.
People hate on Dwight, but Dwight should have been MVP the year Derrick Rose got it. Right. That was Dwight's year.
Right. And that was right. That was so now Dwight again has played for 35 teams since. So I understand why, but it also tells you how the center position has changed, right? It's just there's not a lot there. And so for that's been sustained for an entire decade. So anyway, interesting conversation if you want to check it out. Now, Dwayne in the 2010s, I don't think you can make an argument for. He was
I hear people talk like when that other all decade team came out.
Yeah.
People and Dwayne Wade. I think Dwayne Wade was first team on that, or he was third team.
Third team on 2010s.
Yeah, yeah, people were mad about that. I'm like, man, that was generous.
It was generous. He was not at the. I mean, it pretty much, you know, Dwayne's injury related decline sort of started, you know, about the second season of the Big Three. Where he just couldn't stay on the court as much. And so, no, I mean, you can't make a case there. All right, last thing here on the Heat specifically, we'll do this quickly. Deion Waiters and James Johnson. I don't want to talk about the contracts anymore. It is what it is.
And we
don't need to talk about what happened last year as much. Just this, do you believe that they can be we see the shape that they're in. So clearly – they got the message and or they got healthy and maybe they got both, right?
I think it's
and
both.
Right, so they got both. Do you believe that the two of them can be contributors, big contributors this year?
I'm not going to say I believe because, honestly, I'm not going to get let down again. fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me, that kind of thing. But if they are, right, if and this is what I've been saying. I think those two guys, healthy, in shape, engaged, make this Heat team way more dangerous than we're even thinking, right? It gives even if Deion starts, it gives them a second unit that can be that's a lot to handle. If Deion is who Deion can be, that gives you a dynamic scorer alongside Justice and Jimmy. That you can play with Deion, I mean, with Goran and JJ off the bench. It gives you they become so much more dynamic if those guys are what they can be. Now, if those guys are out of shape, if they're still injured and they can't do what they, you know, you go back to you're a 42-43 win team. I think if those guys are what, you know, at the peak of their abilities, you're a 48-49 win team at that point. So I think it's huge. I think it's really I think it's a bigger narrative than we're talking about. Like that kind of depth is what made Toronto a force to be reckoned with last year, not just Kawhi, right? So it just I think we're underrating how important those guys are, and I think we're underrating it for a reason, just because it's a kind of a show me. We're at the show me stage with them. But I think I'm really excited when I look at them. I look at the shape they're in. I look at Deion. I look at, you know, listen, the empty gym season is what it's all about right now. Everybody right. looks good. But, man, if those guys can be what they can be, it's going to make the Heat way more dangerous than we're even thinking.
Well, it takes pressure off other guys. That's the big thing for me. So if Deion is going to be an effective player for you, as he can be, okay, you know, in the way he can be, because, you know, there are certain things with him that you talk about, you don't like high inefficient players. You know, that's a problem. But he shot efficiently from three at the end of last year. So that kind of changes the equation a little bit, as long as he's not jacking up 13. Like it's not because the numbers guys would say that's fine. But to me, it just kills the offense when he's doing that because everybody else stands around. But as long as he can give you something, then you don't have to push Tyler Herro quite as much early. As long as James Johnson can give you something, then maybe you don't have to play DJJ out of position quite as much, right? Or, you know, we just saw Kelly Olynyk sort of survive an injury scare. He's going to be ready for training camp. But they don't have a ton of bigs options, okay? Maybe Myers Leonard takes some time to acclimate to the defensive system. If you have James Johnson available there, that there's minutes. So I think it is positive. I mean, everything's great. You say you're looking at James Johnson and you're excited. Feelings on the hair?
I think he better cut that before the season starts.
Yeah. Well, he's the one guy in the league who could do that, who could keep it like that, and nobody's gonna say shit to him. Yeah. Right? So
I'm terrified of him.
Right, right. So I
guess when you're a badass, you can do things like that, right?
Right.
I can't get away with it.
No. Well, yeah, I think, but here's the thing. We've seen this before with Birdman and others. Like, if he's playing well, like, that'll become a thing in the arena.
Yes.
Like, you'll see people wearing those, whatever it is, on his head. You know,
people show with blonde mops.
Right, right. That's what's on his head. I agree with you. All right, check out the other podcasts in our network. Also, check out FiveReasonsSports.com, FiveReasonsSports.com. I'll be writing a weekly column on the Heat during the season. That's my plan anyway. I keep saying I'm going to write more. And then, you know, it's funny. I go to all these events now, right? So I went to Miami Media Day. And like that, typically, I'm watching Dave Hyde and all the guys who are there, and they're running back to their laptops to write. And I don't have to really do that anymore. And so every time I'm like, depending on should I write, I'm like, okay, is it really worth me investing 3 hours of my mental energy in this? Or just get on a podcast and talk about it? I've gotten lazy. Anyway, so, but my plan is I'm going to write once a week on the Heat in addition to being around the team. This is your access pod with the Heat. We will be pretty much everywhere. And you'll be hearing a little bit more from Alex Toledo also. You can follow him at Tropical Blanket. We'll talk to you soon.